Welcome to the Upside Podcast, powered by Upside Global and hosted by Julian Blinn, founder and CEO of Upside Global. The Upside Podcast is listened to weekly by over 6,000 sports and tech executives from all sports leagues and teams in the United States and around the world. Julian has been developing technologies for professional sports teams for over 10 years and has worked for major tech companies along with sports tech startups. In each episode, Julian interviews global leaders in sports to share knowledge on emerging technology in the sports industry and how these technologies can help improve the performance of individuals and organizations, both on and off the playing field. And now here's your host, Julian Blinn.
So today we have the honor to interview Dr. Bill Burgos, an experienced NBA strength and conditioning coach. He has worked for many NBA teams, including the Orlando Magic, the New York Knicks, and the Timberwolves. He also worked in the MLB with the Pittsburgh Pirates. He's also an adjunct professor at two universities in the U.S., Mississippi State and Austin Peay State University. And he's also a strategic advisor for two startups, Logic Inc. and Work. So, Bill, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure. I appreciate you.
Great. So, Bill, what I wanted to talk to you about today was first we'll talk about your background in elite sports. Mm-hmm. And then we'll discuss your experience teaching in college. Mm-hmm. And then we'll touch on your approach towards innovation, your favorite mm-hmm. technologies. And then lastly, we'll talk about the current issues with the current technologies being used by pro teams today. For example, maybe the low adoption rates mm-hmm. and the dip into the workflow, et cetera. So how does it sound?
No, it sounds great. I'm ready.
Great. So, Bill, could you maybe start by telling us about your background in elite sports in the NBA, in the MLB, and then your experience teaching in college?
To put it all in a nutshell,
yeah.
I think what really set the tone was my experience in the military.
Yeah.
You know, I was in Army and Air Force. I'm a combat veteran. So, it kind of gave me some discipline, insight on how to lead and how to work with people, work with a diverse group of people. And so by the time I got into professional sports, I was able to employ those skills that I learned while I was in the military.
Yeah.
And so, so the answer to your question, you're saying like how I got into sports or?
Yeah. First, how did you get into elite sports? And then how did you get into teaching in college?
So how I got into sports, I started off in baseball. So I'm bilingual. So I was able to get a job in baseball, especially in the minor leagues.
Hablo español un poquito.
So I was able to get a job easily in baseball. I make it sound easy, but I had all the qualifications and the credentials to help support it.
Yeah.
And so I started off in baseball, got to work with a good group of people who are, they're doing very well in their profession now, such as Barry Balik, Brandon McDaniels, Chris Dunaway, Kiyoshi, all those guys, all those guys are doing very well.
Yeah.
And so from there I ended up meeting a guy named, who's a good friend of mine, Joe Rogowski. Joe Rogowski mm-hmm. at the time was the head strength coach for the Orlando Magic, brought me as an intern. And then it just like grew from there. How I got into teaching, basically I was a student at Austin Peay.
Mm-hmm.
And I became a graduate assistant. At that time, there wasn't really any strength conditioning GAs or anything. So I became a GA for the department, the HHP department, Health and Human Performance. And then one of my duties, of course, was to teach a class. Mm-hmm. And so I was teaching like these wellness, weight training classes, wellness concepts, which then by the time I graduated with my first master's, there mm-hmm. wasn't, I didn't really have a job lined up.
Yeah.
And so the university brought me on as an adjunct. Basically just continuing what I was doing as a GA.
Yeah.
And so then from there, I just started developing my teaching skills, working with the professors, they were actually mentoring me, Dr. Glass, Dr. Steinberg. And so then from there, I started to grow in pro sports and I kind of like drew away from teaching, but then the university reached out to me and asked me if I was interested in creating a course, which was evidence-based practice of sports science. And they allowed me to develop the course the way I wanted to structure it because I was always talking to the university, I wish there was like courses like this. So mm-hmm. they gave me the opportunity to develop it. And it was an online course.
Yeah.
And so from that online course, it just grew to other courses. And then which in the meantime, I had a relationship with Mississippi State University. I was working, helping them with some projects because of my teaching background. Dr. Birch asked me if I was interested in teaching classes, and I started developing courses there. And so I teach workplace physiology and biomechanics there. So it sounds like an overnight process, but in reality, it took time to develop. And, and I'm still learning as a professor to make sure that students are getting the right information.
And this is great. So two questions on the teaching side. So what exactly do you teach? You mentioned the topics, right? People that take your class, do they want to become strength and conditioning coach? Like what's the typical students? Like,
that's a great question. So at Austin Peay, it's a we have students that want to be an athletic trainer, physical therapist, strength conditioning coaches. Some of them just want to be an occupational therapist. Some of them just coaches. And so I try to, you know, like regular sports coaches. So I try to make the course so each person can understand what it means and what it means to them. You know, so if you're a physical therapist, what does an assessment look like? You know, a lot of the stuff that could be used interchangeably in terms of who's actually doing the assessment. But it depends on what that assessment is. Of course, it's within their scope of practice, but I try to make it to where everyone can understand and how it affects them in that profession. Because at the end of the day, we're working as a team, right? Therapists will work with the strength coach, so on and so forth. So I try to make sure that the information that's being given can adapt to any profession. But it's all along, you know, the same line in terms of a performance team. And Mississippi State, the students are more of an engineer, or they want to be safety officers. And so I try to make sure that it's something that they can relate to. So I share with them what I do in the workplace and how this could benefit them in their workplace. So for example, I mean, the way I see it is we're all safety officers, right? If you're a strength coach, you're a safety officer, right? You want to make sure this person's going to be safe when they enter the pit, when they get on the pitch, when they're in the, on the court, whatever the case may be. So we're designing programs based around, you know, their needs, right? Well, same thing if you're a safety officer at FedEx, right? You know, what do they need? All right, what are the common injuries? Low back, you know, so all right, what am I going to do to prevent that? Or what kind of warm-ups am I doing? What's their training history? And so what's the amount of forces being generated on the human body in the FedEx manufacturing plant? Yeah, it's the same concept, but just things are just a little bit different. I mean, because at the end of the day, I think we talked about this. The body doesn't know what it's doing. It just knows it's being stressed. And so I think us as practitioners, we have to understand and identify that stress and then figure out, all right, how can we increase their threshold and make it more of a safe environment based off what they need?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And so which brings me kind of my next question. So, you know, we live in the world where I was talking to Todd Young just last week, and I asked him, I said, how important is technology to you as an NBA athlete? And he said, look, I guess 15 years ago when he started, there was not a lot of technology used in the NBA. But now, you know, you can measure, you know, they use all kinds of technologies, right, to measure force, strength, speed. I mean, it's so broad, right? So when you were a strength and conditioning coach in the NBA or in the MLB, so what's your approach towards innovation? How do you use technology? How do you try to use it so that, you know, it really helps the athlete and the team?
So in baseball, I was in their, I was in their minor league system. So I worked in the low A ball. That was my first assignment. And then I did rookie ball, but we didn't really have a lot of technology. And so what I kind of like focused on was formulas. In terms of, like, for example, there's a ACSM formula where you can figure out one's VO2 max just using a formula. And because we used to do this 1.5 mile run, and I was trying to figure out what can we do to enhance this in a sense. And so it was cool because they gave me that opportunity to do these things. Like Chris Dunaway was very open, and he, you know, because we're all learning from each other. And so I used a lot of formulas. It wasn't really no wearables or anything like that. And so, you know, it was mainly just, all right.
When was that? What year was that?
That was in 2008.
So, because the wearables came out in 2012. So, you guys were kind of early, right?
So, we didn't really have. So, I was just trying to figure out. Like, I remember I would always do base running times. And, like, I never understood why we were taking these base running times. But then we had, like, I remember we had hamstring injuries, right, within the organization. So, I started saying, all right, let me look at these base running times and then start seeing if there's a trend. So, for example, is there times decreasing, you know, which led to an injury. And so I was trying to figure out, like, this is before I got into the NBA, I was trying to figure out what was the percentage of decrease to kind of like alarm us. So if he saw a 2% decrease, say, hey, we got to focus on, you know, the hamstring, whatever the case may be. But that was just something I was trying to like put together at that time. We didn't really get a chance to implement it because I ended up going into the NBA. But I was just like just gathering information and trying to make sense of it. But then when I got into the NBA, I got to work with Dave Hancock, Andy Barr.
Are the Knicks.
And so Dave, you know, that was my first time working with wearables. You know, I've read about it and I've learned about it, but I never really worked with it. And I think at that time we were the only team in the NBA using it. And there was really no rules. But it was cool to identify, you know, the load that was being placed on the body because before we never knew.
Yeah. And so that's kind of scary though when you say that. We never knew.
Yeah, because we never knew. Like we had an idea because, you know, it's like the eye test, you know, whatever, what they tell us. But now you have like you started getting these objective measures and it was kind of like, all right, now we could look at history. We could look at a lot of things and actually pinpoint what's, you know, what's really happening. And so it was kind of cool to see that in place. And I remember having a big board. Dave put a big board and we put these loads and then we started figuring out what their targets are and what the average is. And so, you know, we're collecting all this information. But we're trying to make sense of, you know, what the player needs. So, like, you know, in terms of, like, making sure that, you know, we're not going overboard with, like, any of the training.
Yeah. And by the way, when you were at the Knicks, were there any NBA players for the Knicks that were super interested in technologies? And then some other guys just didn't care.
You know what? The cool thing is, like, they weren't opposed to wearing it.
Yeah.
It was different. But I think what Dave did a good job with was the introduction, like educating.
Yeah.
I think we spent a lot of time educating and prepping versus just putting on. And I think that was the game changer.
Yes.
And so what I've noticed was like, you know, they were still trying to figure out why we did it. They would put it on, but they knew why. You see what I'm saying? And so
I hope they didn't feel like guinea pigs at the time because.
No, I don't think so because it's like, it was a part of the program.
Yeah.
And then it's like, you know, we did it. And then we would talk to coaches, like Dave did a great job in doing that. And it's like, it was, we were very integrated, you know, in terms of like what I had to do in the weight room with the guy, you know, what like conditioning would be like, you know, what happens in the training room. But then it also, I think it kind of like, when you talk about return to play, and you talk about like, you know, figuring out what the problem is, I think that kind of sped it up, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah, and another question that came to mind is that, and I've been following very closely the adoption of wearables in the NBA and the MLB, and we actually wrote a piece that's, you know, for every single league, the big leagues in the world, what is their regulation towards wearables, right? And what's striking is that in the NBA to this day, they still don't allow the use of wearables during live games, okay? Mm-hmm. There was one story one time, the point guard for the Cavs got penalized because he was wearing a Whoop watch, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in the MLB, on the other hand, in the MLB, I think they allow like 3 or 4 devices to be worn by the players, right? And when I talked to some NBA teams, one NBA executive told me, I still remember that, he said, "Jude, let me tell you, I'm gonna make a prediction that the day that the NBA get a piece of like sports betting, they would allow any players to wear wearable technology because they'll get a piece of it. So it will not be more, they won't be concerned about privacy all of a sudden, right? But I think as long as they're going to make some money, then they're going to open it up to everybody. So I don't know, I wanted to get your take on that.
Wow, that's a good question. I think it just depends on how the information is collected because if it's used for medical reasons, then it's like protected by HIPAA, you know? And so I just feel like there's a gray area there.
Yeah.
When it comes to that, because if you're using wearables, like let's say the guy's getting minute restrictions and you're using the wearables, is that, you know, is that considered a medical device? So, you know, I think there's a gray area there. But I kind of see where you're going with this in terms of like, if, you know, with the metrics being involved, but I see that's a tough one. And I think the other reason why it's not being worn is because, well, one is like, I mean, I had these sensors on guys and it flies off.
Yeah.
I feel like you know, there's, you know, once we could make sure that it's secured, I think that's one thing. The other thing is like, you know, figuring out who gets the data. Right.
Yeah.
And then I also think figuring out is like, what is that data considered? Is it medical or is it performance based? If it's performance based, I think, you know, I could see that being used. But then now if it's medical, you know, I just don't see it being used. That's, I don't know if you ever thought of it that way, but that's just my take on it. I think it'll be a gray area once it's considered medical, because right now they got minute restrictions.
Yes.
And they're still, you know, they're still under the care of the physician and practitioner at that point, you know?
Yeah, I think you have to be very careful. Like you said, if you touch on medical data, it's very sensitive.
Because I remember one time when we had a discussion where it was years ago when we were talking about, and this is with other MBA executives, and we talked about, you know, putting performance data in medical, like, you know, be all in one in terms of like an EMR system.
But the
issue would have been is it's like now, you know, like for me, when it comes to performance, like it's a little different now. Now, you know what I mean? Now my way of training has changed a little bit. So it just starts to become a gray area. But I think with wearables in game, I think it's just figuring out, you know, what is the data going to be considered? Is it medical performance? We probably could go on forever on that one.
Yeah. So in fact, that reminds me of the late David Stern. I had a quote one day and he said, my dream is to be able to have a coach on the sideline, right, of an NBA game that can have a system where you can say, okay, this guy is getting dehydrated, take him out of the game, right? Or so I think, I guess if every single team has a system, it's great. It's almost like it's killing the game a little bit, right? Because it's so predictable, right?
What? Let me say this, and this is one thing I've always said, and I've said it in interviews. And my thing is once you start restricting minutes and doing all those kind of, I think you're now extending the training room onto the court or onto the field, right? Which is not fair for the coach, because the coach, you know, he designs his strategy based off healthy players, right? And so I think, and I, don't get me wrong, I totally understand minute restrictions. I totally understand. I get it. But I feel like, you know, I'm not sure if everyone's doing enough in terms of like, what can we do better? Like for me, it's a sense like, what can I do better?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what can I control? What can I do better? Do I have to train differently? Is he doing the right things? You know what I'm saying? Before getting to the point where I'm extending the training room per se into the, onto the court, because at the end of the day, it's like, the coach was hired to do a job. I was hired to do a job. And it's not fair for the coach where I'm saying, hey, coach, he's coming in, but only 3 minutes. It's like, it's tough.
Okay, so what you're saying is that if we're allowed to use a wearables, right, into NBA games, then, you know, coaches could say, look, this guy is getting tired, just take him out of the game. And then you have to limit the minutes. Is that what you're saying?
I think there's a thin line there, meaning like, I'm dictating coach what he can and can't do, but he's being held liable of the success of the team.
Yes.
So my thing is, it's like, you know, before reaching to that point, what can I think it's something to evaluate within your team. All right. What can the medical staff do differently? You know, you start asking questions like, what are some short-term solutions? What are some long-term solutions? But it all boils down. What can we do differently? Now, if we, you know, sat down and we basically say, hey, this is, we did everything, then I understand, you know, we go to coach, hey, coach, we did everything we can. I don't know, it's just me. That's just me thinking differently outside the box, because I just see coaches, you know, I don't want to say they're having a hard time. They're not having a hard time. They're doing their best job. I just think it's not fair for the coaches to have a player that's limited when, you know, when we could probably be doing a better job.
The only, I guess, good thing about maybe having some sort of technology on the players. So take Kevin Durant, right? If there was maybe some technologies that could have told the Warriors, look, you know what? KD is about to get a big injury. Take him out of the game before it's too late, right?
That I agree with, yeah.
Right? So I think something like that, but I think there needs to be boundaries on how do you implement and allow those wearables in games. because otherwise there could be a lot of abuse, right? How it's being used.
No, you're right. And I think it'll answer a lot of questions with the program. Yeah. Like we can probably catch things early on, right? Where you don't have to restrict any minutes. Maybe it's a maybe we could do something outside of the game that we could like that we could control on our side, so that way we could actually get them prepared for coach. You know,
I understand what you're saying. Yeah.
I just feel like it's kind of, you know what, it kind of like goes back to what I was saying about the base running times, right? When I start seeing a decrease, what can we do differently before an injury occurs?
Yes. That's right.
But nothing's changed. You know, the guy's still playing. The only thing that's changing is maybe the warm up. Maybe like he probably has to do an additional strength pro, maybe a massage. I don't know, but we could answer those questions easily now, knowing what's actually truly affecting him while he's playing or performing.
Yeah, no, I think you make a good point. Hey, so next question, because, you know, a lot of the people we listen to the show are technology startups and companies. So, and I know you're involved with some companies.
Hey, before we get it, I'm sorry, before we get it, I just want to be clear that I'm not trying to say that any performance team are not doing a great job. I think everyone is doing an excellent job. Yeah. I just think these are things that we probably could like do better, I guess, you know, in terms of actually, you know, collecting the information and actually, you know, making sure that they meet the demands that are expected. But I just want to be clear with that.
Yeah, I think that thank you for clarifying. So, you know, what are your favorite technologies that you have come across, you know, throughout your career?
Man, this may be a little biased.
Yeah, go ahead.
There's two companies that I'm working with. One is Logic Inc. Logic Inc. created this basically temporary tattoo that lets you know if you have too much sun exposure, which led to me connecting with the company because they also created this thing where they could let you know if you're dehydrated before you know you're dehydrated.
Yes.
And it's all through saliva, which led to them understanding that they could determine one has traumatic brain injuries based off saliva within an hour. So that kind of like intrigued me based because of it wasn't invasive, you know, just just licking. And then they also let you know if you're pre-symptomatic to COVID, which was pretty cool. Yeah. Okay. I thought that was kind of cool because the one thing that got me was, well, during the NBA, while I was in the NBA, like if I was around somebody that had COVID, I was shut down for 10 days. Mm-hmm. But imagine, you know, somebody being, they get the results back and they know that they're pre-symptomatic, but their symptoms are not showing. Yeah, but I'm around them, but I don't get the effects.
Yes.
So it's kind of like you could stop it, you know, at one point. The other company was, it's called Work, WURQ. Mm-hmm. And Work is basically like the Fitbit of strength.
Yeah.
And so they're able to calculate strength, power output, and things like that. And so when I went to go visit them, someone introduced me to them. I went to go visit them and I started working out with it. I thought it was so cool that.
How does it work? How do they measure strength? How do they do that?
Well, they have these sensors. Basically, they have this, typically we will wear a watch, right? And it'll like measure whatever, right? But it's actually just measuring caloric output, right?
Okay.
But with this one is actually measuring your range of motion and your the amount of force and power that's being applied during that exercise. Mm-hmm. And then it has AI. So it's collecting data and information on you while you continue working out. And it lets you know where you need to improve out. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, it has these couple sensors. So basically, it is able to detect a little bit more in terms of your range of motion. Mm-hmm. And what was the other thing that interests me about it? I mean, the biggest thing, it was like a virtual coach, you know, but more of the strength aspect. And and then, it documents everything. And it's just, I think it's one of the coolest things out there. And it's still early, but it pretty soon it's going to be, it's already like catching wind in the CrossFit space. So sorry, right now it's going to be, there's some opportunities where it's going to be at three events where it would be used.
Yeah.
And like Wallapalooza, I think, I don't know if I'm saying that right, but it's a Miami event. I think one in Spain and Madrid and the other one in Australia.
Yeah.
And so I think it's pretty cool. It's a cool product. I think it makes the life of a strength coach, for example, easier? Because that's my thing with technology is what, how can it make it easier for me as a practitioner and collect information, but also benefit the athlete in terms of as we're collecting, because now I could coach, right? I don't have to spend these extra hours like documenting and all this. I could coach, yet at the same time, getting this real-time information that actually makes sense for the individual.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I'll definitely check them out. Another question I want to ask you is, you know, we talked about the adoption of technologies, right, among pro teams and people like yourself. But what do you think are the biggest issues for the teams to adopt those technologies? Because sometimes, and actually you sent me this study, right, that shows that it was done on some NCAA teams, and 70% of the teams that bought wearables, for example, were actually using them. So 30% of those teams were not using those wearables, right? Because of the they didn't believe that the data was accurate, for example, right? Another issue with technology that I've come across is that sometimes those technologies, they don't fit into the team's workflow, right? If you have to let an athlete stand up for like 10 minutes and you know, they don't want to do it sometimes, right? So what do you think are the challenges and the issues for teams to adopt those technologies?
I think there was a few questions. Like one was, you were saying the workflow.
Yes.
I know there's most coaches don't believe in it. I'm talking about like the coach of the team.
Yeah.
They care for the data, right? But then there's coaches that do care the data. But I also think like, what are you doing as a practitioner to share this? Are you just buying it and then like just using it? Or are you including the coach? Hey coach, you know, hey, I'm about to get this product. This is why I want to do it. And so that way you could get that, you know, early adoption from the coach, right? Basically the blessing from the coach. So now it's not a surprise when you get it. Hey, this is other teams are doing this. Hey, you know, so on and so forth. I think there's some type of miscommunication there. Either like you're not communicating with your coach or involving them when it comes to getting this piece of these types of wearables. But I also think education, like, are you educating them properly on the information? Me personally, what I think, you know, for those that are not using it and they want to use it and they want to get their coach involved, I think you should include them initially and say, hey coach, I've done it. I sat down with coach, I say, hey, I plan on doing this. This is why I think it'll improve the team and help with the workflow. And I think if you could get that going early, I think it'll be a success. So I think I think they just need to communicate better with the rest of the staff and include them. The other one, you said something about athletes not using it.
Mm-hmm.
Same concept. I know in the CBA, it talks about like you have to give a written confidential explanation. And I'm talking about the NBA, a written confidential explanation on how it would make them a better basketball player in layman's terms. Are you doing that? You know, are you actually sharing with them, you know, what makes sense to them and how it benefit them? I think keeping it simple, like with one or two metrics, of course you're collecting information, but, you know, sharing information that makes sense to them, but they're not overwhelmed and how this like benefit them as a player and how, you know, other teams, I think that's the same thing. Hey, you know, early adoption starts with early education. And I think if you're not doing that, cost you.
So I think you are breaking up here. Can you repeat that? We're still recording.
I forgot where
you were talking about early adoption,
early education. So for example, when I was with one team, my thought process was to create like a video, right? Like an infomercial for the players. You know, I was gonna basically use it, play, and kind of show videos, and because I really wanted to see it be used, and me using it, and why, and how it benefit them. And so and I think you have to start there, right?
Yeah.
And it has to be, and you got to start early. You can't like start in the middle of a season. It has to be early enough. You get the coaches involved, coaches are talking about it, everyone's involved. And I think the player will follow suit if you do it the right way.
Yeah, I think you're right. Last two questions. I always ask to ask those questions. I asked those questions to Tad Young last week. So you've been working with a lot of professional teams, right? NBA, MLB. What has been the best coach that you ever worked with and why?
Man, that's a tough question because all my coaches were great.
You're lucky then.
But the one that's most memorable, of course, was Stan Van Gundy.
Yeah.
Just because he was my first coach, you know, in the NBA. He set the tone. He set the benchmark. And
Was he tough to work with?
No, he wasn't tough. He was open. I mean, all the coaches were open. I mean, it's just I just remember him the most just because he was my first coach, you know.
Yeah.
He was open. You just have to be able to explain to him why and how this would benefit the team and not just me as a person. I'm not just doing the wearables just to get acknowledgement or anything. No, I'm doing this for the team and then how to benefit them. And so he's open to that. And he wants to understand why, you know, why are we doing this? Why are we doing that? Mm-hmm. He lets you do your job. I mean, he really doesn't question, but like when he does question, he wants to understand why.
Yeah.
I thought he was easy to work with. He was open and he understood as long as you had an effective plan, you're able to implement it.
He was not against it. He liked technology. If it's useful.
I don't think so. It just had to make sense, you know?
Yeah. And then, the last question is, what was the best player athlete that you ever worked with?
Why? Man. Wow. Man. I mean, the first
could be a couple. It could be not just one, but maybe like top three.
Well, all right. I'll say the top. You know, right now I'll say D'Angelo Russell.
Yeah. Right?
I work with him a lot, and he's a great person to work with. He works hard. He believes in the weight room. He believes in everything dealing with fit. Anything that could help him be a better basketball player, right?
Yep.
Just because he loves the game so much, and then he's just a cool person to hang around, you know, be with.
Yep.
You know, another player I could think of is Vince Carter. He was somebody that I watched, you know, as a player, you know, as a fan watching, and then got a chance to work with him. He's so athletic. He's so humble. And the thing is, he's so athletic and he's such a great basketball player, but yet like he's so humble about it. And it also leads me to like Patrick Ewing. I didn't work with him as a player.
I was going to ask you about him. Yeah, I was going
to
ask you.
Yeah, I didn't work with him as a player, but I worked with him as a coach. And I got to like, you know, train him, of course, but became good friends with him. And he's like, he loves the game. Mm-hmm. You know, I love his like his, you know, his stories and, you know, his thought process of like, you know, what hard work is. To be around those three guys, it's wild because it's like Patrick, you know, came from the 80s, right?
Yep,
whereas
yep.
Vince was in the 90s and then D'Lo was in like in the 2000s, right? So I got to see I got to be real close with these type of players in different eras. And they all have the same concept. They all have the same mindset. Even though they're in different eras, they all wanted to be the basketball player. And they were never scared to hit the weight room. And so that just goes to show like how strong the weight room is, or just not, I keep saying weight room because I'm a strength coach, but just performance in general, medical and everything, how important it is to them. And even though it's changed throughout the year, their belief in it was always strong.
Yeah.
And that's what led to them being in there for a long time. And now the only difference is when I talk about technology, I have to really explain, you know, to someone like Patrick, you know, how it benefits, just because, you know, his era, they really didn't use it, but doesn't mean he doesn't believe in it. Then you have, whereas Vince, he was kind of like in that early stage of being introduced to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he believes in it. So, you know,
I think isn't he an entrepreneur, investor in technology companies, Vince Carter?
That I'm not sure of. But I know he's, you know, he is a businessman. And so, but I know that, and then you have D'Lo, you know, who basically came into the league in this, you know, when this technology saturated league. And so I think that, you know, when it comes to education, I think you also got to think about who are you talking to. You know, the way I may talk to coach is going to be different than I talk to the player. They already have their iPhones with them. And so, you know, so I think understanding who your audience is and understanding, you know, who you need, I don't want to say convince, but need to be a strong supporter of what you're trying to accomplish also dictates on how you present it to them.
Yeah, I mean, you have to adapt to your audience, right? Who you're talking to.
Yeah.
But look, we are at the end of the interview, but I really enjoy talking to you. So thank you for your time.
No, I appreciate you very much, man. And thank you for having me on. I hope people enjoy our conversation.
I'm sure they will. Thank you.
All right, man.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To access past episodes and other research, articles, and analysis of sports technology, please visit our website, theupside.us. Subscribe to the Upside newsletter and receive full access to our sports tech business letter and website. Royalty-free music is provided by ibaudio.com. The Upside podcast provides timely insights and interviews with global leaders in sports technology. Until next time, keep looking to the upside.